Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. Welcome back, Wheelchair Nerds. Episode, gosh, I don't even know, maybe 18, 19. I've lost count now. We are hitting the fall time frame. It's getting a little chilly. Y'all heard me talk about pumpkin spice and apples and whatnot in our previous episode. We're talking about our recent launch of a carbon fiber chair into the industry. Super exciting. So I'm sitting here again with my cup of coffee on a coolish, crisp day here in Northern Virginia. And I've got two great friends on here with me because we're going to continue our discussion about ultralight wheelchairs. A few years ago, I actually was down at a hospital doing a clinical education event. And I remember talking with the therapist and I paused and said, guys, let's do a team building activity. I just want you guys to kind of help me understand where you're at with ultralight wheelchairs. What had happened that these younger therapists weren't aware of is that their boss had reached out to me beforehand and said, you know what? I think these younger therapists I'm working with, they're intimidated to recommend ultralight wheelchairs. They can be a little bit scary to recommend. And so I just, you know, did a little open activity with them and asked them to share what are their thoughts. And it's interesting because for folks who've never prescribed wheelchairs, you walk along the street and you see somebody in a wheelchair, you might not realize everything that goes into the decision-making process. An ultralight wheelchair looks relatively basic on the outside, but when you're a wheelchair nerd, it's really important that you get in there and understand it. So today we're going to talk about materials. Before we get started, you guys know I always like to bring folks on here so you don't just have to listen to me talk. So I've got two friends here with me today. One, I swear I'm going to have to start paying him to be on this podcast because he's helped us out a lot. Jim, just in case no one's heard a Jim Stevenson episode, who are you? What do you do? Give me your 30-second elevator pitch.
I'm Jim Stevenson. I'm the senior market access manager at Permobil. Been with Permobil for a little over a month. Actually, we're about midway between in my fifth year. Been in the industry for about 20 years, spent time working with another manufacturer previous to this, and live, breathe, eat, and sleep funding for CRT.
All right. Well, that must mean there's something tricky about, if I've got you on this podcast, something tricky about materials and ultralight wheelchairs. Our other esteemed guest is a little occupational therapist hailing from the great state of Texas. Thomas, who are you? What do you do? And people have never met you on this podcast before. So where did you come from? When did you join Permobil? What did you do beforehand? And last but not least, how did you become a wheelchair nerd?
Hey, Angie, thanks for having me. I am right now sitting in Dallas, Texas. So I'm a clinical education manager for Permobil. I cover Texas and most of the surrounding states. I've been here for I've been with Permobil for 4 years now, a little over 4 years, four and a half, wow. Just the shade behind Jim. But prior to that, I was at the VA in Dallas. I'm working in spinal cord injury. And, you know, it's funny that you talked about walking down the street and seeing someone in a wheelchair. Prior to my experience at the VA, I would have never noticed different wheelchairs or even thought about what goes into those wheelchairs. And now I see myself, you know, if I see a friend in a chair, I'm looking and seeing it and, you know, seeing how it's set up and just a totally different lens that you look through when you have worked in the industry and alongside people for a long time and understand the outcomes that are achievable through that decision-making process that you talked about.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always tell my friends who utilize wheelchairs, I'm please note, I'm not looking at other people in wheelchair and equipment because I'm oh gosh, look at that disabled person. They look different. Honestly, I'm evaluating in my head their equipment and going, I wonder why they did that. Interesting. That's typically what's going through my head. So if you ever see me out looking at wheelchairs, I'm not being a creeper. I'm literally I'm marveling because I'm a wheelchair nerd looking at the different parts and pieces of it.
Yeah, it's funny that you guys say that because to Thomas's point, I mean, you'd notice them, but you didn't really register. I don't miss one now. I don't miss mm-hmm. one. And I'm doing the same thing. It's you could probably use a little help with that or, whatever. And trying to find that middle ground of, how far do you get into this? Is everything going all right with your chair? I mean, I'm one of those people. I mean, I at my local gym, there's a guy that comes in and works out and he's in a chair and his seating situation is just a nightmare right now. And, been trying to encourage him to go see his provider to get that fixed up. And, it's just a different perspective now, for sure.
Absolutely. I know you guys have been known about our podcast since we started earlier this year. Jim's been on a few times. And Thomas, I'm sure you've heard us talk about it within Permobile and outside of Permobile. Really, the vision of this podcast is to bring people, you know, people ask me all the time, what is a wheelchair nerd? It's everybody who has, we call them sometimes stakeholders, you know, in the industry, whether you provide wheelchairs, you utilize a wheelchair of a family member, a loved one. This podcast is truly a place where people can connect and learn more and inspire people to become wheelchair nerds. Nerd is not a bad term to me. So that's why it's one of the reasons why we went with it. So anyway, let's jump into our topic we have, because we're going to talk about manual ultralight wheelchairs. Who of you two gentlemen, I'll let, maybe Jim, you should take this one, because I think as far as like definitions go, you understand the funding side of it. What truly is the definition of an ultralight wheelchair? What does that actually mean?
Well, ultralight wheelchair, you know, it's identified by the HCPCS code K0005. So it's kind of a customized, highly active user type product. The chair itself has to weigh less than 30 pounds, the frame, you know, without accessories and so forth. So it's light. It can be made out of multiple different materials, as we're going to get into here today. And it's generally more efficient. It helps with, you know, propulsion and efficiency and things like that. From a non-clinical brain, that's my, in a nutshell, what K5 represents.
Yeah. So Thomas, from the VA side of things, right? Because you see things from a different perspective. Obviously, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid weren't something you had to interact with a ton or really at all when you worked in the VA. But, you know, when you're talking to a newer therapist as a clinical educator, someone, or maybe someone who's still in OT school or PT school, how would you define an ultralight wheelchair?
As Jim mentioned, well, weight is a component to the ultralightweight manual wheelchair, less than 30 pounds with the frame. But the other major component or major aspect of the lightweight, ultralightweight chairs is the ability to configure it well around the individual. And mm-hmm. if you look at the literature, much of the literature points to that center of gravity adjustment. Where do you place that propulsion wheel underneath the client? And are you able to do that? And what that does is essentially makes the chair easier to push. Whenever I talk to clinicians, I always, you know, have like my overarching goal for manual wheelchair prescription for any client is to push less. Like I want the person who's using that chair to have less propulsions per day. And mm-hmm. so there's a lot of different ways to get there, a lot of different variables in that equation that we have to account for to make that chair set up in such a way that they push the chair less times per day, because that makes them more functional, saves their shoulders, all sorts of things. And weight is one component, but also configuration. And how do we offload the front casters, balance the chair well, put more weight underneath that larger propulsion wheel to improve function and improve mobility?
For sure. And, you know, when I look at the whole broad picture of ultralight wheelchairs, and, you know, I often talk about my mother. I know my mother doesn't listen to this podcast. I don't necessarily make fun of my mother, but I think about her and like when I'm trying to like just describe things, and my mom still has no clue what I do, even though I have a cousin that has cerebral palsy. Susan's older than me, growing up with this. But I try to explain to my mom different wheelchairs. And I think a lot of times people, you know, laymen's, you know, they think of just like the rental chair you may borrow after you sprain your ankle or you're at the hospital. You see them going through the ER, someone pushing a wheelchair to take somebody off to, say, get an x-ray or what have you. But, you know, when it comes to materials and wheelchairs, I think a lot of people don't really realize, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, for years, steel. I mean, for decades, long time ago, or I was recently talking on our podcast we recorded previously. We were talking with Doug Garvin, one of our principal product managers for manual wheelchairs within Permobile, and then also a gentleman named Marty, who is the president and CEO of Spinergy, which is actually not a wheelchair company, but they do have tires and wheels, I should say, as a part of in their portfolio. And now they do the CR1 frame for us. But, you know, we're talking about the history of wheelchairs. And we're like, yeah, there was like this gap between, they were the wooden ones that you still see like in the Smithsonian. I live in DC. You see those in the Smithsonian. And then they moved towards more of like a steel, a heavier material. And I want to say it was probably please do not quote me on this, anybody, but probably somewhere in the 80s and 90s where it really people started to recognize that lighter weight material would make a huge difference. I have a good friend of mine who actually lives in Dallas, Texas, interestingly enough, Thomas, and I was teaching my past life. I was a clinical educator, as y'all know, and I was teaching a session one day. We were talking about ultralight wheelchairs, and I said, hey, man, how many years have you been in a wheelchair? And he said, well, I've been in a wheelchair since 1978, because we were having him talk about the differences of wheelchairs. And I laughed and I was like, huh, you've been in a wheelchair as long as I've been alive almost. And he just shook his head. He's like, you could have gone without saying that. But anyway, to really talk about how the materials have evolved over the years. And it's always fascinating to talk with folks who've been in chairs for a number of years. And they're like, it's changed just dramatically. But here's the kicker. It's changed dramatically. But when it comes to funding, people are still having difficulty getting what they need, which is really hard. But let's dial it back a little bit and help our folks listening to understand the different types of materials that are typically available for wheelchairs these days. And you see larger manufacturers. You also see there's some private companies who do some one-offs to do some customized wheelchairs. But Thomas, talk to it. Once again, take you back to your days of when you were in the VA. If a veteran came in, was looking for a wheelchair, how did you help with that decision process between, I guess, compare and contrast aluminum, titanium? I know carbon fiber is relatively newer to the game, so you weren't in clinic those days, but how would you compare and contrast that with somebody who was trying to make that choice for the wheelchair frame?
So I think anytime that I am trying to, diagnose through or process through providing someone with the appropriate piece of equipment for their lifestyle. I mean, for me, it kind of all starts, with, as an occupational therapist, we call it the occupational profile, right? We want to get a picture of who our client is, and not just, who they are right now, but if they're newly injured, who were they before? What were the things that they liked to do? And mm-hmm. then what are their goals now? And how do we make those? How do we create that good match? We talk about this a lot. Or I talk about this a lot in my clinical classes, is it's so important to fit the puzzle pieces together to make that good match between the individuals. And if you have someone that, like, their goal and where they are in their life cycle process of having their wheelchair, if it's their second, third, or fourth chair, that evaluation looks different than someone that's using their first chair. And then with materials like the VA, we had the opportunity to really provide what we thought would be the best material for those clients. So titanium, I mean, for me, it's a really popular choice because of the qualities, the different material properties of titanium. It's got a very high strength to weight ratio. But one of the challenges, though, with it is, and while it's got a high strength to weight ratio, it's a little harder to work with. I've been to the Tylites manufacturing plants, and the way that those chairs are built is you have to build them in a very clean environment. So you want to make sure that there's no impurities in the air as they're welding the chairs. That adds to some of the cost into that. But at the VA, we didn't, something we really didn't have to focus on too much. So for someone that was as active and honestly, veterans are, I mean, they're go-getters and they're hard on their equipment. So providing them with chairs that were very durable and very light was always important. And then aluminum has gone through a lot of kind of different changes. I mean, when we look at the wheelchair industry, a lot of times we can take a lot of the ideas of wheelchairs back to the biking industry. And so if you follow the evolution of bikes and road bikes and racing bikes and mountain bikes, you can kind of see a parallel with wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. So, from steel to aluminum to carbon, titanium is in there mm-hmm. as well. I was watching a couple of YouTube little things on bike materials here recently, and steel is making a resurgence in the biking world, believe it or not, because the way that they're able to manufacture the steel, they're able to get the weight down. But the ride properties of steel, it's not quite as stiff. A 7000 series aluminum bike is super duper stiff. Steel can be strong and be light and not quite as stiff. So they say it provides a little bit of a better ride. Similar like titanium. A lot of these biking people that do a lot of bike riding, like, they like titanium framed bikes because of the ride quality. Same as carbon fiber, just the responsiveness of the carbon fiber. So I don't know if wheelchairs will go back to using steel or not, but they say manufacturing steel at that level is not cheap. So that's the other process. Aluminum is, the material itself is less expensive and it's somewhat easier to work with as opposed to titanium. When you're working with the 7000 series aluminum, a lot of times to get the strength into the frame, they do what's called hydroform the frame. So a lot of the aluminum, even bikes or wheelchairs that you see that are ultra lightweight, they'll have oblong shaped tubes. And mm-hmm. that's how they're building in or creating those chairs that are light, but also very, very strong.
It's amazing. I had the opportunity back when I was still working at the pediatric hospital here in DC. One of our local sales reps called me up. It's like, hey, can you do lunch with me one day? And that was back in the early 2000s. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I can run out for a quick lunch, but which goes, yeah, I got a friend of mine in town. And it was actually someone you can find in the Smithsonian Museum. And it's somebody that I think in the U.S. is arguably one of the godmothers of ultralight wheelchairs, Marilyn Hamilton. You know, mm-hmm. she was in town. And for those of you guys who don't know her story, she was injured in a hang gliding accident. And so that was one of the things is her, when she got discharged from rehab, she sat with her friends and she's like, what in the world? Like, if I can fly with a hang glider, using aluminum, there's got to be a way for us to make this happen so I can, you know, have a lighter weight wheelchair. And so she really became, you know, and I know Kushal had been doing some ultralight wheelchairs over in Europe about that time or prior to, once again, don't quote my dates on any of this, but it's been interesting to see how things evolve. And I've got some good friends who are still friends with Marilyn to this day, and, you know, talk about how Marilyn and some of her inspirations also touched the creation of other brands of ultralight wheelchairs in the industry. I mean, with Tylight, I mean, Marilyn's still, in the last time I had checked, she still rolls around in a titanium chair because she's that, and that the chair that she created at the other company years ago actually was discontinued, but she still prefers to ride in titanium. So it's crazy. But that's one of the things I love about the world of CRT. And Jim, I know you and I've talked about this, is the fact that, like, yes, we are competitors, but we're competitors of a way to continue to develop for that end user. Whoever is using that wheelchair, we want them to innovate. It's a healthy, fun competition in air quotes, because at the end of the day, we're trying to have that person pick out the best piece of technology for them. So with that said, Jim, Thomas has talked all about how all these different types of materials and stuff.
One thing we didn't touch base on is the carbon fiber, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Carbon fiber. That's relatively new as far as being a full wheelchair. All right, go ahead. Jump on carbon fiber real quick before we move on.
No, yeah. Before we get on to the funding challenges or funding conversation, and we could say there's challenges and all sorts of different things. But, you know, one thing that makes carbon fiber unique that I've had the opportunity to really dive into and learn recently is how it's made and how you can create that carbon fiber chair. It's almost kind of limitless based on the forms and the cast of the molds, and then how these really, really smart people, way smarter than I am, are able to engineer and lay those fibers down and lay those layers down in such a way that you're getting the best properties for that even specific components of the wheelchair, or of, you know, again, we'll talk back to the biking industry. I mean, how they make the bike frame and how they lay, you know, the horizontal tube versus the vertical tube, and how all those fibers are woven and resin layers are laid on top of each other can be different because they're going to encounter different stresses as you ride the chair. And so that's a component that is kind of unique to carbon fiber. And it's also incredibly lightweight and incredibly strong. It's significantly stronger than a lot of the metals that are out there, and what you can do with it. A lot of the feedback that I've seen and read, it's much newer in the wheelchair industry. I think Panthera has been doing it for quite a while, and they've had a super duper lightweight chair coming out of Europe. But especially for, you talk to people that ride bikes, and carbon fiber is just, it's silky smooth in how it rides and very responsive. So, and it's exciting that as a CRT industry, we are continuing to evolve and take next steps down these paths. And a lot of it's as the manufacturing processes change and evolve and get more accessible, it allows, you know, other industries to get involved.
For sure. I think what sometimes people get lost in is the fact that everyone is different, right? One of my good friends within the world of ProMobile, and yours too, Thomas, Nicole LaBerge, likes to say, something for everybody. So, like, everybody needs something. So aluminum's not going anywhere, y'all. Titanium's not going anywhere. Carbon fiber is now in the game. The thing is that we have to keep in mind is that it's really about that individual user, right? Like, you could have three people come into your clinic and you might say, okay, this one needs aluminum, this one needs carbon fiber, and this one needs titanium, for whatever their lifestyle and physical needs are. And that's why I think it's important, is I don't want folks to listen to this and be like, oh man, they're saying carbon fiber is where it's at, I'm going to start recommending this for all my clients, because that might not be the case.
No, that's a fantastic point. I'm glad you said it, because I would have forgotten to mention anything about it. It's because it is. It's exciting to talk about new and upcoming things and the materials, but it all harkens back to, as a clinician, and it's hard because there's a lot of things we're juggling as clinicians, but we have to understand the differences in the materials. Mm-hmm. We have to understand the qualities and how they can, again, match to our client. The worst thing we can do is give someone that really needs a metal chair because of their lifestyles and how they're going to be using the chair, get them a chair that's a carbon fiber chair that's might be unsuccessful for them. And just because, you know, they're throwing their chair around and then how they load their chair or whatever, all those little nuances can impact our decision. And even if they really, really want the latest and greatest material, it's our, you know, our job is to know, hey, I hear what you're saying, but you know, this is, you're not going to be as successful with this type of material for these reasons. All goes back to that user match.
Mm-hmm. And also we do have users. We have folks who utilize wheelchairs that listen to the podcast too. And so that's important, is to, you know, have those conversations and don't be afraid to have those conversations with your provider, with your therapist, and say, hey, I mean, it is the job of anybody within marketing. Like, we want you as a manufacturer to look at our what's new. But just because, you know, this is the new one, it might not be appropriate for you. And that's okay. You might still be like, man, this titanium is, this is great. This is what I want. And, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of thing. So lots of different options there. But for folks who are not in the VA system here in the United States, and then just in general, I think a lot of times people shy away from different materials because of the cost. Yeah, you look at things like iPhone. I think I saw the TV commercial. Doesn't iPhone now have like a titanium something or another? I'm like, what in the world? iPhones put titanium in it. But like, I can assure you, I will not be the person shelling out the cash for a titanium phone. But I think it's interesting that, like, with everything, there's a spectrum with pricing, right? And if you limit things and limit innovation based on price point, it's always this careful thing that we, I think, as a manufacturer, that you walk that line. And even as a therapist, I mean, I had a physicians who were hesitant in the past for us to show clients things that they're like, well, their insurance is never going to let them pay for it. It's like, I'm not one to judge how these people are going to find their money. That's not up to me. So talking about the F word, Jim, isn't that terrible? I'm about to bring you in to talk about the F word, but the funding word. Jim, what's the story when it comes to materials in ultralight wheelchairs? Because I think a lot of therapists do shy away when it comes to recommending anything besides aluminum. So give me the 411. How has that changed over the years, and what's happening with that? So say Thomas says, say Thomas is working in a hospital, not in the VA, and he, you know, goes to recommend a chair, and it happens to be the carbon fiber one is the one that he clinically decides with, along with the, you know, letter medical necessity. They've written it all up. Like, this is what this client needs. What things might he run into when it comes to funding for say carbon fiber?
Well, in a situation like that, I mean, first and foremost, a lot's going to depend on which payer you're working with, whether that be Medicare, Medicaid, or, you know, some private insurance. You know, they're all a little bit different. But to kind of go to the main piece of why we're at where we're at today is, you know, Medicare is, they're the largest healthcare provider in the United States. A lot of payers follow suit with what Medicare, oh, if it's good enough for Medicare and the government, then that's what we're going to do too. And back in December of 2016, Medicare came out with a statement saying that special materials, i.e. titanium, carbon fiber, and I don't know, maybe any other type of special materials that we may invent in the future, are included or bundled, as far as funding terminology goes, bundled into the wheelchair base, meaning that they don't want to pay anything extra for titanium or carbon fiber, which is fair. We've never asked them to pay for titanium or carbon fiber, but in December of 2016, they turned the tables a little bit to where, in order to get special materials in your chair now, you pretty much have to pay out of pocket for your entire chair. So that means the wheelchair base, your seating and back cushions, just behind arms, you know, any of the different accessories that you would need on that chair, you have to pay for all of those things up front and have the provider bill that claim unassigned. And not every payer has this as an option either. So that creates another level of uncertainty.
So help me understand. So you can't come in and say, Thomas recommends it, says, you know, this would be an XYZ upcharge. Like, you can't choose your material. And then Thomas's client says, oh, it's okay. Like, I'll find that few $100, whatever it is, right? Like, I'm happy to pay that. Like, I want to, you know, I understand the value of this. I need it for whatever. They can't offer that additional few $100. That it's either you pay nothing and get aluminum, or you buy the whole thing out of pocket.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the way it used to be prior to December 2016. I mean, somebody could pay the difference between the aluminum, the basic aluminum ultralightweight chair, and whatever the difference for titanium was. They could pay that out of pocket. But when Medicare came back and stated that all that stuff was bundled. And the interesting part of that is K5 code was introduced back in, I don't know, 1992 or 93, sometime early 90s. Mm-hmm. And part of their explanation for why they were coming out with this statement in 2016 was that they had taken into consideration all the different materials that wheelchairs could be made out of back at the time they created the K5, and the reimbursement rates that they created around K5 took all of that stuff into consideration. Now, we know it from our basic history lesson that titanium chairs were not a thing then. Carbon fiber certainly was not a thing back then. So how did you take that into consideration when it didn't exist yet? And so there's been a lot of pushback. We've done FOIA requests, you know, for a 3-year period around that early 90s timeframe when they created K5, searching for any information where they mentioned titanium or carbon fiber or anything around special materials. None of that exists. So it's just a little peculiar how we got to where we're at. Currently today, we actually just had some legislation introduced in the last month or so, HR 5371, which is around allowing people to pay for titanium just out of pocket. And just to kind of give you an idea, like if something under the current guidelines today, if we don't get this legislation passed, in order to go and buy a, let's say, a titanium ultra lightweight wheelchair, it's going to cost the entire cost of the chair, whatever that means. I mean, that could be several thousand dollars. Whereas if they had the ability to just pay for titanium separately, that number is now maybe $1,000 to $1,500, which is much more manageable for somebody to be able to find $1,000 or $1,500 for the upgrade versus, say, $4,500, $5,000, or whatever it might be for the entire package. So right. It creates a financial situation that isn't necessarily reachable for everybody. And there's no real logical reason behind it. It's basically Medicare coming out and saying that we're not going to let you choose how to spend your own money.
So, all right. So that could be a bad analogy. And Jim, tell me if it is. But as you're thinking through this, I'm thinking about, like, I don't use a wheelchair. So I'm trying to put this in a more of a layman's terms for my brain to understand. Is this kind of like when my eye doctor was like, okay, I know you're having issues with your monthly contacts. There is an option to move to dailies, but the rate is, you know, you're going to have to pay more for having daily contacts. This is your choice. If you want to just have it where insurance pays more of it, stick with the monthly. But if you have the means to go up a little bit, you can choose to go to dailies. Are you saying, is that a pretty decent analogy?
I mean, I guess in theory, but from a funding perspective, it's a little different. I mean, the one thing that is kind of parallel to this that's, you know, similar in our industry is mastectomy bras.
Okay.
Medicare and the different payers will pay for just basic needs. Somebody who's been through all that, they may still want to feel feminine and have, you know, something more to it than, you know, just the basic. And Medicare doesn't allow them to pay out of pocket for those type of upgrades either. To a lay person, somebody who's not a wheelchair user, I kind of look at it from the perspective of going to buy a car, mm-hmm. and you can only buy it with standard options, meaning you can't get air conditioning, you can't get automatic locks, and you can't pay out of pocket to get those things. You're just stuck. Mm-hmm. This is what you get. The difference is that there's no third party funding right. component of that, but that would be a comparable thing to where you can't have any of these things that are going to be beneficial to you in your driving experience. You're not allowed to pay out of pocket for that.
That totally takes away user choice. That handcuffs them.
Like, that's exactly the point. And that's exactly why this legislation is so important. It does not cost the government anything. Like I said, we're not asking the government to pay or Medicare to pay for titanium or carbon fiber. We're just asking them to make it less of a hassle for people who choose to pay for it themselves to pay for it themselves.
Hey, Jim, have you heard any talk or is there a timeline for a decision on the bill? Is it hopeful that it'll get passed? Have you heard anything about those things?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, we've been fighting this fight since 2017. I mean, they announced this decision in 2016. We immediately started fighting it. I mean, obviously, titanium is near and dear to us with our, you know, Ti-Lite friends. So we've been fighting it all along. And this year feels different. I feel like the message is being received differently. And kind of like to the point that Angie just made, it's user choice that you're taking away. So it's almost more of a constitutional issue in the minds of the people we're talking to than it ever has been in the past. And I don't know that our messaging has necessarily changed too much, but we've been providing more visual to show the difference of what somebody has to go through today to get a titanium chair through Medicare versus what it could be if this legislation were to pass. So being able to put that in front of folks to where they can actually see the difference, it's significant. I mean, the support we're getting is good. It feels different this year, but anytime you're dealing with the government, I can never feel too comfortable. I feel pretty good about this. I mean, if we're going to get there, I feel like we're better off than we've been in the years past, but I'm always a little nervous as to whether or not we're going to get kicked out in the 11th hour. I mean, that happened to us a couple years back where we were ready to get put into a bigger bill attached to it, and we got weeded out right at the last minute. I feel like we're in a good place, but it's kind of a wait and see.
So I mean, I remember this earlier this year, Thomas, I know you do too, when it related to Elevate, right? Like, what can we do to help inspire and to mobilize people? I know that there's great organizations like the Item Coalition, there's NCART, United Spinal, there's AA Home Care that are really pushing for this too. You know, what can we do to help get people to mobilize to do something?
I mean, the biggest thing right now is, you know, finding a way to reach out to your local representative, you know, that sits in Congress or your senator, and say, hey, this is important to me, and here's what this means. I mean, and be able to straighten this path forward to this technology and that sort of stuff. I mean, it's really just about telling the personal stories and making sure that everybody understands what's going on. I mean, this has been going on for almost 7 years now, and that's 7 years too long. I mean, but especially because there's no real rhyme or reason. I mean, it doesn't cost the government anything. And that's a key point to make. If you do reach out to your representatives, is that, hey, we're not asking the government to pay for this. We just want it to be an easier pathway to get to it when we pay for it ourselves.
Yeah, it seems like an easy ask. We'll be sure, Jim, I know you're great about keeping me aware of everything that's happening. We'll definitely be sure to send emails out, post on social. We've got our Advocate for More Permobil website. You guys can Google just Advocate for More. You can also find it off the permobil.com website. We do keep that updated. We've got some stuff, a little blurb about it. But if there is what we call a call to action, we will definitely be talking about that, because we saw how pulling people together, you know, voices matter, how that worked with Elevate. I'm a little bit different of a scenario here as far as, you know, for Elevate, it was making a public comment to CMS. But, you know, this would be directly contacting your representatives. But the representatives actually make that easier than you would think. I know it can be very intimidating for people to say, oh my gosh, I've got to call my senator. But it really relates to more numbers that are being heard, and for people to kind of turn their head and be like, oh, wait. So we'll, you know, in the past, we've done things like email campaigns, like to your senators and folks on the Hill. But we will definitely keep you all aware of that. So Jim, are we looking at, like, so it's October, early October that we're recording this podcast. Are we looking at, like, if a decision that has to be done before this session of Congress ends in 2023, or we have to do a new bill? Like, I'm gonna be honest with you.
That's why it's been so challenging over the years, is because every time we switch over January 1, it resets the clock, and we have to kind of go back and relay the groundwork that's already been there, because, you know, different people are in office now, and you know, some of the people who have been supportive in the past may have retired or not won their election or whatever. So whatever the answer is going to be to this year's efforts, we'll know by the end of the year.
All right, so pedal the metal, folks. Pedal to the metal. No pun intended when it comes to metal, as we're talking about materials and wheelchairs. Look at that. Crazy. Well, I mean, I think all the different materials that are in wheelchairs, I think it's something that it's important that we keep these conversations going. We love to empower therapists and providers, and also folks that utilize this equipment to ask the questions. That is one thing that, you know, another thing about this podcast that I always tell people, I'm like, ask those questions, ask your provider questions, and ask around about funding. I mean, there are other opportunities for funding. If you do hit this roadblock and, you know, the answer is absolutely no, there are various organizations out there that will help with funding. And Jim, I have no idea if this is even possible, but, like, what about, like, flex spending accounts? I mean, does that even come into play? I guess it would depend on their insurance. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of, like, creative ways.
I mean, I would certainly consider that a medical expense. So, I mean, I don't have any facts, concrete evidence that that's true. But in my brain, and having worked in this line of work for a really long time, I would fully expect that an HSA or an FSA would be viable as far as, you know, being able to help pay the bill for titanium or carbon fiber.
Yeah. One of the things that a lot of times people, and I can remember parents of the folks that I would work with, because I worked in pediatrics for 12 years prior to moving to a manufacturer. And, you know, a lot of times people would say, well, so-and-so said it wasn't covered. And I think asking a few more questions. I'm not trying to say your provider is not telling you what is accurate, but really digging in a little bit deeper and don't just stop up at no. I know that Danielle, who was one of our guests behind the podcast talking about standing, is that she doesn't take no as an answer. It's like she just keeps digging. And I think that's important, too, for folks to just keep asking questions.
Yeah, to that point, Angie, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people just call it non-covered because they're not getting anything extra for it. Whereas in Medicare's eyes, it is covered. It's just included in what you get paid for the wheelchair base. So that's kind of the play on the words, if you will,
yeah.
That, you know, Medicare, oh, well, you know, we cover it. It's just it's included in K-5. So,
yeah.
But of course, you know, there is added a cost in providing that, and the provider expects to make extra more money on top of that. It's just one of those things where there's no true evidence that supports what has been done around titanium. So we're just fighting to bring it back to neutral, I guess, if you will, and let's continue on with people being able to do what they want with their money and how they want to do it.
And back to your point, Angie, as a clinician, if we are recommending something, whether it be in the past power seat elevates or standing or a certain material for a wheelchair frame, there's reasons why we're recommending it. And if we get pushback and say, oh, well, that's not covered, that's not paid for, it's really important, you know, on the clinical side to investigate that. Well, what does that really mean? Does it mean it's, and sometimes it's truly not paid for, but sometimes it's just not easy to get paid. It's not easy to get funded. It's a more rocky path, but there are avenues to ensure that our clients that we're serving, that we're recommending the CRT for, is really getting what they need. Because what I remind clinicians to do is, you know, this goes back to the choice. And I'm so thankful that this is in front of Congress as a bill and hoping that it gets passed because of that, because people have the right to choose how to spend their money and to make it make it more accessible. But these are, I mean, for all intents and purposes, these are 5-year decisions.
Yes.
And it's if you spread out, say, a seat elevator, whatever, let's say it's $1,500, $2,000 over the course of 5 years, I just break it down to, hey, what does that look like a month or a week? At the end of the day, it all goes back to your Starbucks latte, your $6 latte per day. And, you know, just making it, detailing it down into those components, I think it makes it a little more easy for people to swallow. But again, it's, if someone says it's not funded or not covered, that's always, as a clinician, if you're recommending it, it should be like, well, is it truly not covered or is it just hard to get? And
that
why?
Should activate their spidey senses for sure.
Yes.
Yep.
I'll never forget in my first clinical education classes I was teaching, and Thomas, you can probably relate to this as being a clinical educator. I was in a U-shaped room, right? And I remember something came up and I had therapists and providers in the room, which typically happens when we're teaching a continuing education class. And there was one therapist that was on either side of her were the two providers that she works with on a consistent basis. They work for the same company, two gentlemen that were there. Her response was, well, in the state, XYZ is not paid for, so I'm told I can't recommend it. And right around that time I was about to take a break. And so during the break, another PT came up and was like, hey, can we go back to that? Because I want to make sure that she knows that her code of ethics and her licensure, if she clinically believes it's important, she should not listen to what other people are telling her. She is bound by her code of ethics and her license to say what is medically necessary. And so when we came back from break, I kind of let the discussion happen. I watched it play out a little bit and I jumped in. I was like, here's the thing, guys. I'm like, be transparent with your customers, like the folks that you're recommending this for. This should be something you're approaching this as a team, not provider versus therapist. This is we can honestly say, this is the crappy system that we have for funding. We want to work on it together with you. We know this is medically necessary. So provider, let's join arms in the person who needs the chair. Let's link together and figure out how we can work this out, as opposed to maybe not being accurate. Because I don't want a therapist to get in trouble with their licensure because they're not doing what they believe is clinically necessary. So definitely an extreme case, but it's something that I think we need to make sure that therapists are aware of
I think that happens way more than you're even aware of, Angie. And
yeah.
Quite honestly, that's probably a topic for another podcast entirely, just to kind of lay that groundwork and clear the air, if you will.
Yeah, no, for sure. Thomas, I see you smiling. What anything else on that topic?
No, it's right. It's a whole other conversation. I mean, how much time do we have?
We'll definitely do another one though. We've got Kayla and I, who's our executive producer, are planning our season 2. So maybe we'll add that to our brainstorming list for sure. All right, gentlemen. Well, I think we met our goals of what we want to talk about in this podcast today. Thomas, if folks want to, you know, if they're more of, you know, once they're listening to this in their car and they get to their office, they're like, I want to know more about, you know, materials and wheelchairs. Are there resources within the world of Permobile, like, you know, blog posts, like what's out there, or can they reach out to a clinician within Permobile? Like where can they get more answers?
Yeah, I mean, in the recent past, we've had some blogs on materials. If you just search materials or manual wheelchair materials in Permobile, you'll pop up some blog posts. You know, one I just wrote recently, and then there was several years ago talking about different types of materials. I think it was 2020, 2021. There's a couple other blog posts. And really, I always refer kind of people back when we're talking about best practice. Resna just released the end of last year, beginning of this year, their white paper on ultra lightweight wheelchairs, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. They talk about materials in there. Now, it's not a lot. It's not detailed, but it does mention, hey, there's lots of different materials that chairs can be made from. And it's our job to make sure that the materials and the people match up together. So I would absolutely check out Resna and then any of our other blog posts.
Yeah. And then I believe we have on our website too, a way to, if they're, you know, if someone in the area that you cover, you are one of a fantastic team of clinical educator resources within Permobile, where they can find whoever is their local person to touch base with. You guys talk to therapists all the time, one-on-one, and kind of help problem solve some stuff. And Jim, I know also we've given it out on this podcast before, but I think it's important to say, what is that email address if people have questions about funding?
It is us_funding@permobile.com. And that email is distributed to myself and all the clinical team. It's coming to the people who, you know, and then we help distribute it around, you know, depending on where it comes from. And we would distribute it to the person that's most local to that area to help out. We're all super passionate about helping people get the equipment they need. If you need us, reach out to us. It's just one of those things. We're all just trying to help people get the equipment they need and live the happiest, healthy, independent lives they can stand. So if we can do something to make that process easier, better, faster, whatever, just reach out.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this podcast up. Thomas, thank you for becoming a wheelchair nerd officially, publicly, although I know you've been a wheelchair nerd for years, and joining the podcast. And Jim, as always, I know you will be back. Gosh, I hope we're talking about good news. Maybe we'll do a breaking news podcast with the two of you when, I won't even say if, I'll say when Congress says that they want to cover that. They want to allow us to allow that choice. So thanks so much, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Angie.
Thank you for listening to Wheelchair Nerds, presented by Permobile. Today's episode was brought to you by
the Tylite CR1 wheelchair is the perfect combination of lightweight carbon fiber construction and custom fit technology. Designed to maximize your efficiency and accessibility so you can move with ease, the Tylite CR1 will impress you with true innovation, rare in its class. Learn more about the Tylite CR1 today.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you'd give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobile.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you.